Mercy Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate. Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We're a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, our programs, social justice, the Mercy World, the Catholic Church, and interfaith relations. Today, my visitor is Sister Gemma Wilson. Sister Gemma, a warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Thank you very much, Beate. Thank you.
Sister Gemma Wilson is a Marist sister, a Kiwi, who worked in Brazil and Mexico for many years and also in Colombia for nearly a year. She spent 7 years on the General Council of the Marist Sisters in Rome. And when she came back to Aotearoa, she was the leader of the Marist Sisters in New Zealand for a few years and still supports some of the many Latin American people in Auckland. Sister Gemma also used to be the coordinator of ANZRETH, Aotearoa New Zealand Religious Against Trafficking in Humans. Sister Gemma, can you please tell us more about this work of the group ANZRETH?
Yes, certainly. Well, ANZRETH in New Zealand began about 2011. Just a small group of us in Auckland. And there are three groups now, Auckland, Wellington and Dunedin. And our work is to draw attention to the problem of trafficking in human beings, slavery in the world today. Slavery was abolished a couple of hundred years ago, but today there are around about 40 million slaves in the world. And our work, as we see it, is to raise consciousness, to educate about this reality, which also exists in New Zealand, and also to work on prevention and some advocacy with the government.
But what is a slave in today's definition?
Well, there are different kinds of slavery today. There is sex slavery for commercial sex, forced labor, child soldiers, trafficking of people for organ removal, forced marriage.
So when you say trafficking for organ removal, does that mean you abduct somebody because he or she has organs that you need?
Yes. Yes, and organs are very precious. As you know, people need kidney transplants and heart transplants and other kinds of transplants, and these, apparently, these organs can be sold. And I don't know very much about this particular kind of trafficking, but it certainly exists. And of all the others, you could talk for hours about the different kinds of slavery in the world today.
Because some people still consider slavery as it was in America and then mid-19th century.
Yes, yes.
And during the time of the when Americans were living in big farms and had slaves, black slaves and chained. But that's not the case today, is
it? No, that is not the case today. That slavery was abolished.
So it's more subtle
but
now.
But it's hidden, and yet there are, as we'll talk about this in a few minutes, there are many, many organisations in the world who are working to expose the evil of trafficking and to do what is possible to eliminate this scourge in today's world. And I don't think many people would know that there are about 40 million slaves in the world today. I mean, it might be more.
10 times New Zealand.
I was going to say, yes, it's like 10 times the population of New Zealand.
That's incredible.
Mm, so that is what ANZRETH is.
Yeah, thank you for that clarification.
Good.
And it's great that the sisters are involved in that and trying to create awareness.
Yes.
Because that's the beginning of any change to be aware of something.
I must say that it's a group of religious of many different congregations. One of the things about ANZRETH, which is unique perhaps, is that, well, not totally unique, but it's very positive, is that many different congregations, mostly women's but some men's, are working together. And we think that's very important.
Yes. Mm. Thank you very much for that clarification. And for those of you who have just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk or visit our website or Facebook page at Te Ngaka Waiora Mercy Spirituality Center. My visitor today is Sister Gemma Wilson, and she is a Maoris sister who has lived many years in Latin America and used to be the coordinator of ANZRES, Aotearoa New Zealand Religious Against Trafficking in Humans. Sister Gemma, I understand that you were recently in Rome for a special occasion. What was that occasion?
I was representing New Zealand ANZRES, New Zealand Religious, in an assembly of an organization called Talitha Kum. Now, Talitha Kum means little girl, stand up. It's the words of Jesus to Jairus' daughter, whom he raised from the dead. And Talitha Kum is the umbrella title, if you like, for, I don't really know how many groups, I can't say, but Talitha Kum is in 92 countries. Groups of religious of different congregations. It's on the five continents, and it is growing. So I went as the New Zealand representative of ANZRES to this assembly at the end of September in Rome.
How are they connected, ANZRES and Talitha Kum?
Well, Talitha Kum is the, if you like, the umbrella term for all these national groups of religious who are working against trafficking in humans. So we all belong to Talitha Kum, but ANZRES and then the Australian sisters' groups are called ACRATH, Australian Catholic Religious Against Trafficking, etc. And there are networks in most countries. We talk about a network of anti-trafficking organizations.
Mm-hmm. And so you explained where the name Talitha Kum comes mm-hmm. From the Bible. Mm-hmm. And who started this initiative?
Well, many years ago, a sister called Eugenia Bonetti, who is an Italian sister of the Consolata congregation, began working with prostitutes in a city, whose name escapes me at the moment, in the north of Italy. And she actually went to Nigeria to find out what was happening because these women didn't want to be in prostitution. And she was literally rescuing them. She was going to meet their families and got in touch with the government. And then she gave a talk to the International Group of Justice and Peace Coordinators. And I was the Justice and Peace Coordinator for the Mara Sisters at that stage. So we decided, after her talk, we decided to form a little group, an intercongregational group in Rome, which we did about 1997, more or less. And then I left Rome in 2001, but then that little group grew and they started forming groups in other countries until today. As I said, we're in the Talitha Kum network, if you like, which began in that little group in Rome, is now in 92 countries.
And can you tell us more? So the purpose is to create awareness or to do changes or to help the victims?
Things, Beata, yes. All these groups, each of which will have a different name, have a slightly different emphasis. One emphasis would be on education of the public, education within the church and outside the church about the existence of this problem and the causes. We could say raising awareness in the wider community. Another thing that these groups are doing is advocacy, as I said before, writing letters, going to Parliament to talk to representatives about possible laws that could be passed. I could talk more about that later. Mm-hmm. But then there are many religious in different countries who are working with the survivors. I was sitting next, we had tables, international tables according to language, and I was sitting next to a sister from the United States who works in a safe house for women who've been trafficked into prostitution. And they are very, very damaged psychologically. physically too sometimes. So she told me a lot about that. So working with the survivors.
Is it organized prostitution that they were victims of?
It's organized. The traffickers are the people who, if you like, deceive these women, some men do, into believing they're going to get a good job. Not in prostitution, but they're going to get a good job and they can send money back to their families. That's one thing that happens. So they're brought to the States or to Italy or maybe New Zealand. I'm not too sure about that. And they have their passports taken from them and they are prostitutes, but they don't receive any money. So that's what these. And then if they're rescued in one way or another, they need a lot of help. And a lot of the sisters there were working with survivors of slavery.
What countries do they come from?
Well, there are 92 countries.
I mean, the victims.
The victims come, the country where the most people are trafficked from is India. Within India and then outside India. And one of the main causes, root causes of all this, of course, is poverty. I was in a group. We were divided into groups many times, and we were in an English-speaking group. And the question that we were asked to discuss and come up with some answers about was, who are the traffickers? So there was a sister from New Zealand and myself, plus women who spoke English from several Asian countries, including India. And so we said something a little bit theoretical. And then the coordinator, who was somebody from Myanmar, she said, well, what do the rest of you think? And about four or five of them started to call out, oh, it's their parents, it's their friends, it's their neighbours, their brothers. And that one of the moments where I was very, very shocked, because I thought this, I did not know that. I thought they were nasty people that came from outside, which is true. But these are literally their parents, their brothers, some of the people that traffic them know exactly what's going to happen.
So they are more or less sold?
Yes. And the root cause of all this is poverty. And not just poverty as we might see it here in New Zealand, but grinding poverty. And the same true in Africa and other countries in Asia too.
And what about other, you mentioned now some trafficking regarding organs. And
yes.
So that's also happening in many countries, or is it happening in certain countries?
I have to admit that I'm quite ignorant about this. I've never really studied it, but it was spoken about. I think China might be one of the places where that happens. But there are others that I do know more about. For instance, exploitation of labour. And there's been, it's been discovered in New Zealand, you know, just simply that workers, seasonal workers, for instance, are not properly paid. They're paid low wages, or in some cases not paid at all. Lately, perhaps this last year, the government has put on a lot more labour inspectors to check that this isn't happening. So that exploitation of labour. And just as an interesting point for us who love our chocolate, Nestle, Hershey and Mars are three international chocolate organisations, if you like, where child labour is used, and those children don't receive anything. And they are picking, or they're, whatever they're doing is sometimes exhausting adult work.
That's why you have the fair chocolate and fair trade.
Yes.
And there you can rely on organisations that are checked, that are controlled.
Yes, yes. I must say that part of our work in Ansrath, we've been writing to different firms about questioning them about their supply chains. And we got a long, long letter back from Nestle saying that they were working on this problem. And I think that is true, but there's still a long way to go.
And the question is, how far is it in the priority list?
Yes. Well, I can't make any judgment about that, but I do know that we did get a letter back from Nestle, and if I remember rightly, got nothing from Mars or Hershey.
Yeah.
But they have been quoted by reliable sources as being that there are thousands of children who are in that forced labor, if you like, with no pay at all.
So this kind of research is helping to advocate and to educate people who are the consumers.
Yes.
Because if there was no consumption of certain food or certain products in general, that is not done without child labor, without forced labor, then the if nothing is bought, that's a signal to the market.
Yes. I could go off on a tangent here about part of our advocacy, which we're working on at the moment, has been to write to the government to ask them to put in place in New Zealand a law such as has just been passed in Australia, has already been several years in Britain, in California as well, saying that firms whose if you like, the bigger firms would have to publish their supply chains to prove that there was no slavery in any part of their supply chains. It was Acrath in Australia who were largely instrumental in getting that law passed. So we wrote to the government. We got a very, I must say, a very satisfactory letter back from Mr. Ian Lees-Galloway, who's the Minister of Immigration, and he said they were looking at it. But they wanted to see how it was going to work in Australia before they went any further. But it was definitely on their list, if you like. So we're going to write again this year. We keep on writing because we think that's going to be a very strong way of combating trafficking.
I think it's good if the consumer can read about the supply chain and then decide if he or she wants to buy the products or not, rather than just taking it off the shelves.
Yes.
And because we'd leave it up to the consumers, but they have to be informed.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what was your impression of the assembly in Rome? You were in the English corner, but you were also fluent in Spanish. You could have been in the Spanish-speaking
corner. And Portuguese.
And Portuguese.
Yes. So, and French to a certain extent. But I was, of all the aspects, I think what most touched me was the joy and the enthusiasm and the passion of these women. There were two brothers there too, very brave Maris brothers from Paraguay and Uruguay, I think. But the joy that was there, and yet this great union in our common cause. Of course, our common cause, we're all consecrated women, men, and yet we are united across, I don't know how many congregations. And in a way, the congregations were secondary. It was that we were consecrated people working to eliminate, or at least contribute to the elimination of something very evil.
So you were full of hope. You were not angry.
No, there wasn't that much anger. It was more like the last day we were dancing together, and it was beautiful. And at lunchtime, for instance, we'd be chatting and sharing experiences. And because I felt a little bit humble because I had done no really hands-on work like some of them. But there was a sister just meeting people and talking to them from countries that you know have suffered, like Myanmar was at our table, spoke beautiful English. There was someone from Syria, Cambodia. I could just name. There's 92 countries, so I can't name them all, but these women were women that I got to know a little bit. And just as a little bit of aside, if you like, the sister from Syria bought a beautiful icon of Mary made out of the ruins of bits of charred wood, burnt wood, stones from the ruins of Aleppo. And I'll tell you what happened to that icon in a little while, but it was very moving. Her name was Annie, and I didn't get to talk to her enough to know what her experience was, but that was something that we were all very moved by. So it was the internationality and to feel not so much that you're a New Zealander, yes, okay, but that you were you're part of this world of women who are working to bring God's reign, but in a very concrete and wonderful way. And that it made me more and more enthusiastic, both for the anti-trafficking work, but also for being a religious.
So it was really a wonderful network.
It was.
You were part of a network despite being at the most southern corner of the earth.
Yes, yes. I have to say that on the first day, Gabriella Bonetti, who's she's an Italian sister who's now in charge of the network, and she worked in Brazil, very close to where I was working, though I never got to meet her. But she came up to me and she said, "Oh, it's so wonderful to have someone from right down there." She said, "This is the first time that we've had somebody from New Zealand," and I felt very specially welcomed. Yes.
And, well, did you take any resolutions? And to whom did you report them, if you took any?
Certainly. Let's say the priorities for Talitha Kum, meaning the whole network, for the next 10 years, or 5 years perhaps, I think it was, first of all is prevention. Prevention through education, schools, public meetings, churches, tourists, etc. And secondly, the second priority was caring for the survivors, and the third priority is advocacy with the governments and as well, these big firms, I presume. And the fourth priority is growing the network. We were asked to, why weren't there representatives from the Pacific? Why was there nobody from Samoa, Tonga, Fiji, etc., etc.? So that's the fourth. And then there was a declaration, which is not so much about work, but saying what are the root causes of trafficking? And the declaration comes up with three, and one of them is the power differential between men and women in all sectors, social, familial, political, cultural, and religious. And the second root cause would be the dominant model of neoliberal development and unfettered capitalism, which creates situations of vulnerability that can be exploited. And the third priority were unjust and inadequate immigration law.
And in fact, all these priorities have to do with poverty and wealth.
They do.
With a big gap.
Yes. There's a lot, just as sort of an aside, connected to the third priority. A lot of trafficking goes on in these groups of hundreds of thousands of migrants or refugees pouring out of war zones, pouring across the border in the States. That's just a field, a fertile field for the traffickers.
Yeah, yeah. And while you were in Rome, did you meet the Pope?
Oh, most certainly, yes.
Oh.
I can't say I met the Pope. We met the Pope, but then I did for a few seconds. On the second to last day, we were given a private audience, and because it was 82 or 4 of us, plus the reporters, plus translators, etc. But first of all, the Pope actually spoke to us. He spoke in Italian. I could catch most of it. Then we got an English translation. And what he spoke quietly. That's what struck me, and gently. But three times he took his head, he stopped looking at his paper, and he said something off the cuff. And I never forget the three things he said. One of them was, it's wonderful that you're working together. He said, that's very good. That's a wonderful example. Maybe I shouldn't say this on the radio. Wonderful example for the priests and the bishops. I'm sure he wasn't talking about New Zealand. He said, lifted his head and said, insieme, which means together. And then the next time he lifted his head, he said, you know, a lot of your superiors say to me, oh, we've got too much to do, too many internal problems, what are we going to do? And he said, there's only one answer, go out. He said, go out onto the streets. Then you'll forget all your problems. You'll see all the problems that are there.
Yes.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
And then the third thing, which was spontaneous and very beautiful, what he said, before you go to sleep every night, bring to mind the face of one of these suffering people, and that will be your prayer.
Wonderful.
And then we went up one by one, and we were told we could talk to him. We didn't. We're not allowed to kiss his ring or any of that, but we could say something briefly to him. And I was going to say in Spanish, which is his language, thank you for your compassion. But when I got there, all I could think of was thank you. So I said, gracias, gracias. And his lovely smile. And he seemed tired.
Yeah.
And I can understand why.
Mm. But it's wonderful because you said that you are going to do advocacy work. That's one of your goals. Mm. And you've started with the Pope, which is great.
Yes.
I'm sure that he was aware of most of it.
Yes.
Because of his background. But
yes.
I think it's great that he can see that he has support in this work. So.
Well, in fact, he started a group called the Santa Marta Group, of which the Emeritus Bishop David Moxham, Anglican Bishop of Wharton of New Zealand, was a member. So he himself began a group, an international group, to work on it.
Wonderful. I wish you all the best for this work.
Thank you.
And maybe you can get some lay people to support you.
Now, that's part of the next thing, that we're going to have lay people, and it's going to be interfaith.
Yes, that's important.
It is in the Middle East.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you very much, Sister Gemma.
Good.
I think that's a really good initiative, and thank you for your passion for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that you'll attract many people in New Zealand who would like to join you. Mm-hmm. And if that's a movement that covers the world, I think that we can solve some problems in a very peaceful way.
Let's hope.
Yeah.
And pray.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Beat.
And let's have a look at what's happening in our Mercy Spirituality Center. Our first public event for this new Year of Presence 2020 is Dreamwork 202, Practicing Dreamwork Skills with Margaret Bowater on Friday the 31st of January from 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock. On Saturday the 15th of February from 9:30 to 3:30, Sarah Cooper will facilitate a retreat day with the title Reconfigured, Transformed by Reality. On Friday the 21st of February from 10:30 to 12:30, Sister Elizabeth Sneddon is going to present a muffin meeting on the Mystics of Helfta, the Two Mechtels and Gertrude. For all events at our center, please register with us per phone at Auckland 09-638-6238 or through our website at www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. And if that's the first Muffin Talk you're listening to in this new year, then I'd like to wish you a very happy new year, and I hope that you'll tune in regularly on Friday mornings at 8:40, Planet FM 104.6. Thank you very much, Sister Gemma, and all the best.
Thank you.
And have a blessed Friday and a good week ahead. Thank you.